Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast is being brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit coderedroofers.com.
Well, one thing about this, right, is they want you to share everything with everybody. But they are the most selfish, self-centered people on earth. The Squad, the ultra-left-wing congressional socialist, which has been the toast of the so-called progressive movement for the last several years, its members tell you that they want to find, they want to make it a workers' paradise in which government withers away. But now they're only too happy to direct government largesse to the folks back home. In fact, the Squad members have earmarked $224 million in all kinds of absurd pet projects since 2023. That's 1 year. The earmarks that they've put into this spending bill, this $1.2 trillion spending bill last week, it's a stunning display of log rolling, really. They say they hate earmarks, and yet they, you know, they call them a tool of capitalist oppression, but they maxed out their pork. Their 215 earmarked projects cost the rest of us, who are overwhelmingly not socialists, but just U.S. taxpayers, cost us $224.1 million. Every dime was borrowed against our national debt. AOC, who last week did not know that RICO actually is the name of a crime, was the most prominent voice of the Squad, celebrated as the socialist superstar by the Democratic Socialists of America. Guess what? She earmarked over $1 million for a new building for the, you love the name of this building, the International Muslim Women's Empowerment Project, whose founder teaches something called hijab grab, which is a self-defense move involving a kick to the groin. If they want to give me $1.2 million, I will teach everybody, not just Muslim women, but everybody, how to kick a violent perpetrator in the groin. We'll do a little Krav Maga for half the money. And then there's $500,000 for her Billion Oyster Project in her district. Let me ask you a question. Who do you know that eats oysters? Like, rich people eat oysters. Poor people can't eat oysters. The law prohibits anybody from fishing or eating oysters in the Hudson River. So this is an engineering project for eco-marginalized people in Queens. She actually called it that. You can't make this stuff up. I wouldn't. It all comes from open books. Other Squad members are Jamal Bowman, Corey Bush, Greg Cesar, Summer Lee, Ilhan Omar, Ayanna Pressley, and Rashida Tlaib. And they shoveled some pretty stinky stuff into spending bills. And all of it appears to be race-based legislation, but that's okay if a progressive does it. You can have $850,000 to create jobs for the black community near George Floyd Square, whose murder in 2020 added to the stress faced by the community and increased the need for support and stability in housing and commerce, according to Ilhan Omar. $1.7 million to help the Environmental Leaders of Color, build a green tech park so that healthy plants can survive in their natural ecosystem. Thank you, Congressman Jamal Bowman. You know, the same guy who pulled the fire alarm by accident. $1 million for the Immigrant Opportunity Center expansion, which is run by CAPI USA, a nonprofit that guides refugees and immigrants in their journey towards self-determination and social equality. Thank you, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. How about $1.5 million to build special grocery stores and education facilities for Black farmers in the community of St. Louis, Michigan, not St. Louis that you're thinking of? Patron, Congresswoman Cori Bush. $1 million for the San Antonio College Empowerment Center, which runs an undocumented student support program to help immigrants enroll in the school. Thank you, Greg Cesar. And then, of course, all the Green New Deal crap that Ocasio-Cortez threw in this bill. It's the focus of 21 earmarks to build green infrastructure, move away from fossil fuels, involve minority communities in climate policy. She and her colleagues find ways to get people like me who don't believe in this crap to pay for it. $1 million to build a network of intergenerational, trauma-informed waterfront green spaces. I have no clue what that means, and neither do you. Thank you, Ayanna Pressley. $500,000 to improve the energy efficiency of a St. Louis, Michigan homeless shelter. Thank you, Cori Bush. $4 million to build an industrial green beltway in Dearborn, Michigan. Thank you, Rashida Tlaib. $500,000 from AOC will build an oyster reef. That's right. Because, you know, those people in Queens are desperate for oysters. And harvesting them for food is illegal, so I don't know what the point of this is. $850,000 to repair a bridge that connects in minority environmental justice communities in Pennsylvania. Thank you, Summer Lee. $2 million for Everett, Massachusetts to build a park for low-income BIPOC residents to stay cool during increasingly hot summers. BIPOC, by the way, in case you don't know what that means, is, oh, let me hope I remember, Black, Indigenous, and Other People of Color. Yeah, Ayanna Pressley, you got it. So much for the insane earmarks. But don't think that the Republicans got serious and cut those wacky earmarks out. No, they didn't. Representative Pressley had an earmark to build affordable housing for LGBTQ seniors. That didn't make it into the final bill. But in the second bill, she was able to add back $850,000 for LGBTQ, the pride, senior housing by moving the earmark to the U.S. Senate. And she said that Republicans were homophobic because they didn't want those earmarks. From time immemorial, politicians of every stripe have used their positions to benefit the people who sent them to Congress. But then they stick the taxpayers with the tab. Congress people all play together in this disgusting, swampy sandbox, promising not to rat each other out for some strikingly goofy, if not downright weird, local spending. Things got so out of hand 15 years ago that a bipartisan coalition that was led by former U.S. Senator Dr. Thomas Coburn, the Republican, and President Barack Obama, who at the time was a senator, actually banned earmarking for 10 years, but it didn't last. So regardless of what you may have heard about how Republicans hate earmarks, no, they don't. They're just as guilty. And they have put in place 8,051 earmarks between the Democrats and the Republicans, totaling $15.7 billion, taxpayer dollars, my dollars, your dollars, in this year-end omnibus that was stuffed with earmarks. Congress is supposed to disclose these earmarks online, but what it does is it puts them in these very hard-to-review PDF files. So we have to depend on, like, the team at OpenTheBooks.com to convert the files into Excel spreadsheets, and then we can look at what they're hiding. So Congress knows what it's doing is wrong. So it just makes it a little harder to find the corruption. In all too many ways, earmarks, whether they're from Democrats or Republicans, are no exception. These people disgust me, and they should disgust you on both sides of the aisle. Because there's no other word to describe what they're doing other than screwing the public and laughing their heads off in the back rooms, in the cloak rooms of Congress, as they climb on their first class seats to their home districts where they might not even have an actual residence because they now live in D.C. and they are D.C. swamp creatures. They're still searching for the workers that are missing after that bridge collapsed yesterday. We do find out a lot of, we've found out a lot more facts in the last 24 hours. The fact that the Mayday that was sent out actually did save lives. And the police radio captures the whole scenario from the calm to the fearful, scared calls and cries for help as a cargo ship the size of a skyscraper drifted to that bridge. The bridge that carried more than 30,000 cars every single day. The crew issued a Mayday, hoping at least to save some lives, and apparently they did that. My question is, if that ship had not hit the exact spot that it hit, that bridge would not have gone down. Does that not concern us? It was catastrophic destruction that's going to impact our economy, as I told you yesterday, long before anybody else was talking about it. So much for those electric cars, my friends. Those electric cars would mostly be coming in through the port of Baltimore. Not so fast. Not so fast. And all they could talk about today was how this is really going to adversely affect Carnival Cruise Lines. Really? That's the headline? And the fact that President Biden said, oh, we're going to foot the bill. You know why? Because he doesn't want anybody asking what really happened. You see, if the shipping industry were instead sued, if that line that flies under a Singapore flag, if they got sued, they'd have discovery. And they might find out that there's more to this story than an accident. So how do you shut that down? Yeah, you get the government. Get the government to take over. No questions asked. We're just going to rebuild the bridge. We're not going to ask any questions. We're just going to fix it. Man, there's something really stinky at the Francis Scott Key Memorial Bridge. Don't forget to download the app, the 850 WFTL app, either on your cell phone or on your laptop so you can participate in all of our contests and you can be a part of listening to the podcasts ahead of everybody else because you'll have it right on your cell phone or not. Just visit the website, 850WFTL.com. Let me take a quick break. I will be right back. You know, sometimes I'll predict something's going to happen. And as I told you, I'm not a prophet. I'm not prescient. But I'm pretty smart. And I can predict with a great deal of accuracy what bad policy will do to individuals. I have two kids who live in the state of California. And Gavin Newsom, who's got to be the worst governor in the whole United States, Although they think he'd be a great president, which really makes no sense. But this guy has insisted that there'll be a $20 minimum wage law. So you're beginning to see the effects that I predicted in all of these fast food restaurants in California. And the effect, which you don't have to be that smart to figure out, is they have to fire employees, number one, and they have to raise their prices. So according to the Wall Street Journal today, particularly pizza chains, and even some of the better restaurants, higher-end franchises, have cut back on staff because they know if they're paying $20 an hour to each individual, you can't get $10 for a batch of fries. Well, I guess you can. You're going to have to. You have to pay $20 for a hamburger. And I have no idea how expensive a Pizza Hut pizza is going to become. But if you have to pay the Pizza Hut guy or the Pizza Hut drivers $20 an hour, wow. Well, Pizza Hut, a whole bunch of Pizza Huts in California, announced that they were no longer going to deliver pizzas because they're not going to pay a guy $20 an hour to run around delivering pizzas. Southern California Pizza Company said it was laying off about 841 drivers across the state. That's in L.A., Orange County, San Bernardino, Riverside, and Ventura counties. So maybe they can, you know, limit access to delivery service because they've always got Grubhub and these other services. Uber will bring you pizza. Fortunately, remember what happened to me when they delivered the pizza when I was in San Francisco to my grandsons and I on New Year's Day. The guy who looked as though he had just come into this country, probably across the border and probably from the Middle East, just saying, he had put my pizza, our pizza, sideways in a shopping bag. So, of course, when you open the pizza box, everything had slid to one side of the pizza box. It was just a mush of cheese and pizza dough. So how long do you think you're going to have business if that's the kind of drivers your population? And I wasn't ordering from Pizza Hut. We actually ordered from a fairly nice pizza place, single shop owner. Select California franchisees have elected to make changes to their staffing approach and some to their delivery service. According to the Wall Street Journal article that I read this morning, in Menlo Park, California, there's a company called Round Table Pizza, and it fired 73 delivery drivers so far this year. Excalibur Pizza LLC similarly stated that the majority of the workers being let go from its business are also delivery drivers. The franchisees are transferring their delivery services to a third party. While it is unfortunate, we look at this as a transfer of jobs. As you know, many California restaurant operators are following the same approach due to rising operating costs. We anticipate third-party delivery providers, in turn, will see a boost in their business. Hey, it's good for Uber! They're, of course, going to require additional staff on their end. Fat Brands, Inc., which is another large company that owns restaurants like Johnny Rockets, Hot Dog on a Stick, Fat Burger, and Round Table Pizza. I just have to repeat those names because it's probably going to be the funniest moment in the show today. Fat Brands, Inc. is the name of this parent company. And they have restaurants called Johnny Rockets, Hot Dog on a Stick, Fat Burger, and Round Table Pizza. Stated that the change may result in much higher delivery costs and higher prices for customers in general. Brian Holm, who owns two Vitality Bowls restaurants in San Jose, California, said that he staffs his establishment with just two people rather than the customary four. Customers will now have to wait longer for service due to a staffing shortfall, and prices will rise to offset the higher labor expenses. I'm definitely not going to hire any more, he told reporters. Employees of fast food franchises with 60 or more locations around the United States are affected by the Newsom-approved wage law. Additionally, contrary to what critics claim, many fast food business employees are not just teenagers who are working their first jobs. Many of them are hardworking mothers and fathers who have mouths to feed. So being fired from a job due to a statewide minimum wage hike is not ideal in any circumstance. Restaurants are struggling to stay above water. So here's all I'm going to say to my family, my children and their husbands and wives in California. Your restaurants in your counties were struggling to stay above water. And so your elected Democratic representatives just threw them an anvil. And that's what we warned. That's what people like me, free market economy people, warned the Democrats, that when you raise the minimum wage, it costs people their jobs. But you ignore us. And here we are. California has the highest unemployment rate in the country, and it's about to get even worse. And anybody that bakes and prepares bread in-house to sell as a standalone menu item, they're excluded from the new regulation. So in other words, my daughter's best friend, Black Jet Bakers, Gillian, this does not apply to her. So if I were pizza places, I would now declare myself a bread restaurant, and I just happen to throw some cheese and sauce on the bread. Governor Newsom thinks that the answer to this problem is to give hardworking fast food workers a stronger voice and a seat at the table, higher wages, better working conditions. What good are better working conditions and higher wages if you don't have a job, Governor Newsom? These people never eat fast food from Pizza Hut. They go to what was the name of that fancy restaurant he went to during COVID? French Laundry, where the prices start at $35 for an entree. And he also never explained how the employees who get cut from the workforce and the prices that get higher and higher will just end up putting companies out of business. You think that's good for your state, Governor Newsom? You think that's good for your state, you voters who keep guys like Governor Newsom in office? Ridiculous. That's all I'm going to say. Absolutely ridiculous. I want to start reminding you that Honor Flight is back and riders are needed. April 6th is mission number 50. Of course, it's done to honor the veterans, but also they're going to be honoring the volunteers for Honor Flight. So wouldn't that be cool? Saturday, April 6th, mission 50 is going to be taking place at Palm Beach International Airport. If you want more information, you can visit the website for Honor Flight, or you can contact Jim at nopockets.com. Jim Kamen is a ride captain. He'll give you all the information that you need. It's Jim at nopockets.com. Let me take a quick break, and I'll be right back.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
So the news just keeps rolling in, and people just seem unwilling to consider what happens. It's not enough to have, let me give you a great example. I don't know diddly squat about P. Diddy. I just don't. It's been years since I even had a passing thought about Diddy. You know, I think the last time I even remember thinking about him was when he was dating Jennifer Lopez. How long ago was that? Like 30 years? I don't know, a long time ago. I'm trying to figure out how he was running, what they're accusing him of running, an entire sex trafficking operation. And there were reports about it. And all of a sudden, we're seeing headlines. We're watching his house in Miami with FBI agents showing up. There's photos out today that show, on TMZ, of course, where else would it be? They raided his house. And when I tell you, it looks like Roger Stone's house or like Mar-a-Lago. They went through this place, turned everything upside down. You see pieces of computers and other equipment in pieces on the floor. Hard drives were seized, and we're talking big computer networks. Not like your computer, like you come into my house and you got two laptops and one desktop. You rip it out, it won't really upset anything. There are computer rooms in Diddy's house, the one here in Miami, they look like factories. His mogul attorney, because he's a mogul, you got to have a mogul attorney, right? This was a gross overuse of military-level force as search warrants were executed at Mr. Combs' residences. There is no excuse for the excessive show of force and hostility exhibited by authorities or the way his children and employees were treated. Where were these people when the pastor had his house raided because he dared to pray in front of an abortion clinic in front of his children? Nobody said anything except a handful of conservatives. Where was the media? I'd like to know where TMZ was. Maybe I'll ask my son on Friday. When Roger Stone's house was raided with divers in the water behind his house, he's roused out of the house in his pajamas and handcuffed, and CNN just happened to have a film crew there. That didn't bother the media. As a matter of fact, they were like really happy about it. But oh no, they're very upset. This rush to judgment against Diddy, Mr. Combs. How about the rush to judgment against Donald Trump? Does anybody ever make those kinds of mental comparisons besides me? These people apparently have been under a microscope, not just Diddy, but all of the people in his inner circle, because they have a lot of evidence. Those Homeland Security agents went in there, sweeping through his properties, hauling people out, including his two sons, and pointing lasers at them and handcuffing them and dragging them outside of the house. They didn't arrest his sons, but they took him out of the house. Why? Because he's being accused of not just sex trafficking, although that's bad enough, but soliciting and distributing illegal narcotics as well as firearms. He has not been charged with any crime, at least not yet. He's not under arrest. But nobody knows where he is. If TMZ doesn't know where he is, trust me, nobody knows where he is. Because they got footage of the inside of his LA house all over TMZ's website. The untouchable got touched. Because if you've been watching some of the news releases, you've had these various, I don't know what you call them, snitches, who have been saying, we've been telling this story for 20 years. We have been talking about these so-called parties that Sean Diddy Combs has been throwing in his bulletproof billion-dollar empire. And we've been saying that he thinks he's bulletproof. He has a very questionable past. He's been able to control everybody around him because he's had a lot of power for a very long time. There's a detective in the New York Police Department in what they call the Rap Intelligence Unit, also known as the Hip Hop Cops. He said, someone got behind this, someone who wants to destroy his brand and take him down. And it looks like that's what's happening, because the once uber-powerful Diddy looked pretty lost on Monday while they were raiding his home in Miami, and he was here in Florida, and while they were raiding his home in L.A. We're talking Homeland Security agents swarming these houses. It looked like a scene out of Cops. And we're talking two ends of the country, right? The West Coast and the East Coast. And meanwhile, if you looked at the pictures of him at the Miami Opa-locka Executive Airport on Monday afternoon, when they stopped his private jet, the feds came on the tarmac. He was about to go to somewhere in the Caribbean for spring break with some of his seven kids. And just at the same time, his alleged drug mule, Brendan Paul, was arrested on suspicion of cocaine and marijuana possession in Miami. The noose is tightening around Sean Diddy. It all happened almost one day to the month since Lil Rod, this guy Rodney Jones, who's a former producer and videographer for Diddy, he filed an explosive lawsuit claiming that the music mogul repeatedly sexually assaulted him from September of 22 to November of 23, groped his genitals, was grooming him into having sex, and, I don't know. I don't know if that's all true. After news of the raid, though, all these old videos and interviews suddenly started coming back online, some showing Usher, who was only 13 when he was sent to Diddy's Puffy Flavor Camp at his Scarsdale mansion. Usher, who's now 45, told Howard Stern back in 2016 that he had seen very curious things taking place at the camp and that he would never send a child of his somewhere like that. It was pretty wild. It was crazy. There were very curious things taking place, and I didn't necessarily understand it, Usher told Stern. In a 2004 interview with Rolling Stone, Usher recalled how Diddy introduced him to a totally different set of sex acts. I don't know how else to describe it. The feds apparently have an informant on the inside of Diddy's inner circle, or they would not have done this. Of that, you can be sure. Because the liability with a multi-billionaire like this is incredible. But hey, they figured if they could get away with doing it with a former president by the name of Donald Trump, why would they stop with the rap king? Somebody's given them sensitive information. Somebody collapsed and is cooperating. And it's probably somebody pretty close to him. It looks like the tip of the iceberg is what it looks like. You know, so we'll see. I remember when everybody was thinking that it looked a little too orchestrated against Rick James. And then, you know, anytime one of these superstars or one of these celebrities gets caught up in these crazy stories, eventually they come to light. You know, this is not Jeffrey Epstein, who managed to keep the lid on all of the disgusting sexual things that he was arranging for all these hotshot politicos and people of whatever interest. No, that's not the same in the rap world. Apparently, not at all. Don't forget, coming up after me is Eric Erickson, followed by Joe Pags and Lars Larson, the Overnight Guys, and then Jen and Bill will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., followed at 9 o'clock by Brian Kilmeade, at noon by Dan Bongino, and then I'm back at 3 o'clock. Still have a segment left in this show today. Stay right where you are. I will be right back. So, while that may not be, you know, the typical fare for a political talk show, I think it is, because I think what we're seeing is a lot of this dark, how do I put this? A lot of the things that go on in places like the swamp, in places like the rap world, in places like, well, you name them. You know, obviously, Jeffrey Epstein's story got hushed up because he was killed in jail or hung himself, whatever. But this is the beginning of a moral reckoning, I believe, in this country. You see, I think for a long time, and it's interesting because I was speaking with a lady, a friend today, who said to me, we were both commenting on how when we were young, we're pretty close to the same age, people would get a tattoo. Maybe you'd get two tattoos. Maybe you'd even get three tattoos. Like, I'm one of those people who, I liked body art. And I got the tattoo on the ankle, you know, and the tattoo on the back of the shoulder. You know, I'm not the kind of person who didn't think there was something attractive about a tattoo. But now I see these women, young women, who are literally covered in tattoos. I mean, sleeves, up their necks, on their faces, entire, you know, from the knee to the toes, just covered in tattoos. And we were talking about how the acceptance of that amount of body art really says something about society in general. And look, most of the young people I know don't have that much body art. I mean, my kids have none. You know, my stepdaughter has some, but not to that extent. And most of the time, the people that I know that still get tattooed at all, they get like sort of meaningful tattoos. If someone they're close to passes, they may get a tattoo honoring that person, but they're not just covered. And we don't even look askance at that anymore. I cannot imagine. When I was growing up, anybody who had like an arm sleeve of tattoos, we thought that they had escaped from the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey circus. You know, oh, look, she must be the tattooed lady. It just wasn't very common. And now it is. And I always feel like asking young people, because I mentor a lot of young women, and I always feel like asking them, like, did you ever for a moment think, like, how difficult a job interview might be when you are literally covered in body art? And it doesn't matter how beautiful it is, because some of it is exquisite, you know, all kinds of flowers and dragons and all this very artistic art. But if it's all over your body, how do you show up for a job at a law firm? You can't even show up with like long sleeves if you've tattooed up your neck and on your face. Can you? Can you work in a doctor's office? Where can you work? And that's like, I guess what we were talking about is how we have accepted and gotten used to things that really aren't particularly good for people to get used to or accept. And that's why I'm here to tell you that there's a change coming. When you start seeing these empires like Diddy, his empire, when you see that start to crumble, when you start to see, and by the way, you know who they're already dragging into this is one of the royals. So of course, everybody immediately thought it was Prince Andrew or whatever his name is, Andrew the uncle, that his name would come up. But no, it was Harry whose name came up in the Diddy empire. Wonder what Meghan thinks about that. Although, who knows, you know? Everybody accepts everything. There's no longer too much or too little. We just say okay. So now we'll see. The Titanic law is going to help the ship owner. They won't actually have much liability at this point. The owner of this Singapore flagship that rammed into the bridge, they could face hundreds of millions of dollars in damage claims, mostly because of the vehicles that went plunging into the water, and mostly because of the chaos that's going to affect the transportation network. But they have a path to reduce their liability under an obscure 19th century law that was once invoked by the owner of the Titanic to limit the payout when the Titanic sunk. So we'll see. This is a Singapore-based Grace Ocean. They're the owner of the container ship Dolly that crashed into the Key Bridge yesterday at the start of a voyage that had been chartered by Maersk. Maersk is a shipping giant. My papa used to be a bosun on many ships that had Maersk cargo on it. So we'll see. I think this is going to be one of those times where maritime law experts are going to be on CNN and MSNBC and NBC and Fox. But I'll tell you, one person who won't be on MSNBC or NBC is Ronna McDaniel. She lawyered up, though, so I think they're going to rue the day that they went ahead and hired her, because you know she had a contract, and all those people, they really slandered her. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what her lawyer does, but I'm betting that people like Rachel Maddow defamed her live on the television set. They went on the airwaves and they said in live broadcast that this isn't right and they better get rid of her. And she's a bad person and she lied and she this and she that. I don't know. They never mind when they hired the Jen Psakis of the world, right? Nobody said a word. We'll see how Ronna McDaniel comes out of this. My suspicion is she'll come out of it very rich. So I thank you for your time this time. Until next time. And my plan is to be back here at 3 o'clock tomorrow, if it be his will and he delays his coming. What lies behind us and what lies ahead of us, well, those are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. So wherever you are, just be yourself. Everybody else is taken. And then, of course, may God bless you, may God bless Israel, and may God bless the United States of America. See you tomorrow at 3.
The Joyce Kaufman Podcast has been brought to you by Code Red Roofers, South Florida's leading residential and commercial roof experts. Code Red Roofers, roofers that respond. Call 844-4-CODE-RED or visit CodeRedRoofers.com.